Welcome to the Vinyl Preacher Podcast. It's the internet's only lectionary-based preaching podcast, the only place to get hot takes on how to preach the hot texts that have been assigned by the gods. I'm Zach Paris. I am the pastor of Luther Campus Ministry, the University of Colorado Boulder, and today I'm joined by the legendary guest. You might know our guest from their prolific writing, blogging. People are still blogging in the 2020s, and this guy is at the head of that movement. He will be the last man left on WordPress. You might know him from his articles in Living Lutheran. I assume that all of our listeners subscribe to the physical print edition of Living Lutheran. You might know our guest as the internet's foremost pumpkin spice latte enthusiast. It's Tim Brown, everybody.
Hey, welcome to me. Thank you, Zach. Appreciate that.
Yes, thank you for welcoming me to my podcast.
Welcoming me to my podcast, to your podcast. That's what I was doing. I appreciate that. Yeah. I know we haven't always gotten along over the years, but I'm grateful to bury the hatchet on this this whole thing and have me on right here at the tail end. I think is your last one before the new year, or are you going to do a Christmas?
Oh, we'll do a Christmas episode. Tim, you now, unlike Matt, who's not with us today, you and I live in the same boat now, which is you and I get to preach some of the most important Sundays of the church year, which is Slaughter of the Innocent.
Right.
I'm already booked for January 3rd.
It's a favorite.
Dead Babies.
It's a favorite.
That's a great one to preach. And, of course, Easter 2 is are the highlights of my preaching year.
Thomas is our guy. Yeah, I am the director of special gifts for Methodist Home for Children here in North Carolina, and still a pastor in the Lutheran Church as well with a it's been centered here in North Carolina, but not serving a parish at the moment. We get called in for the B sides of the records.
Best songs are always on the B sides, though.
Yeah, you are absolutely right. I mean, what's the single Toto? They did Africa, but the best song is on the flip side of that, which is Rosanna.
So. Boom. We told you, folks, this is the place to come for them. Tim, I've got a theory, okay, and I want to let you know. I'm going to let you know my theory first, and then we're going to have time for you to respond to my theory. Does that sound like a okay agenda?
Sure.
I think that the closest you can come to preaching in the modern world is stand-up comedy. It's the only other art form where, you know, 10 however many minutes you're talking about here, right? You're up there by yourself and you have to commit, like, that's it. That's all you get, right? And I'm always jealous of stand-ups because they get to learn bits, right? And they get to, like, go up every night and, like, perfect a bit. And so that then they can kill. Whereas when you're a working preacher, oh, man, that'd be a good podcast name. But it wouldn't apply to me because that's not me. When you're a working preacher, getting up week to week, you work all week on it. You preach it once. It bombs. And you don't get to, like, reap the reward off of it the way a comedian does. You know, like, you just throw it in the trash and you're like, or if you kill, you're like, well, good. I never get to preach that again. Preachers. But as in our role, Tim, as pitch hitters, as people who come in to preach, what I have enjoyed about it is that because I go to lots of different places, I get to work on bits, actually. And so now I've got a catalog, really 10 to 15 preaching bits that aren't comedy bits, right? But are stories that I know the beats of that I can tell really well because I've gotten to workshop them over the years.
Yeah. Material works like that. It is good. That's why I always appreciated having a couple of services at all my parishes that I served, because that 8 a.m. crowd, man, they got the beta version. And and then you just perfected it for that second group. And then I had my last parish, we had a third group, a night service. And boy, they got the pared down version because I was tired of preaching.
Anyway, let's go.
No, it's not worthless at all, man, because I actually think – so here's the thing. I actually think pastors do get bits, right? Mm-hmm. We all preach one sermon over and over again. We just use different words.
Right.
And you do. I mean, how do you open your sermons? Do you have like a little form opening?
Tim, Tim, yeah, no, you've been listening to the podcast, have you? It's been a thing recently. I'm anti opener. Most mm-hmm, of it, mm-hmm. I try to be anti opener. Mm-hmm. If it's a place that they know who I am, hopefully I get the introduction done earlier, right? Like, I do, unlike real pastors, right? I've got to be introduced at some point because you may not know who I am. You got visitors, like, I'm not the pastor of this church. I just showed up here. Sometimes I got to do that at the beginning. But from a preaching perspective, I'd much rather not and be able to, like, I want the whole space to do my art, if you will. I'm not a grace and peace to you kind of guy. Do you have an opener?
No. And in the same sort of vein that you are, I hate the trite. That's my word. I consider them trite. The trite form openers. Mm-hmm. Just because I think it's like kind of like an on ramp that people use that's convenient, but too well worn. Sometimes I will do a prayer to open up, but the prayer is always different. Never same prayer. And it usually will riff off of the themes of the sermon. But that's kind of my thing. Like, so like your form is by not having a form.
Yeah. I mean, so what it is, I think my preaching has really benefited from being on the road a bunch, learning what works and what doesn't work, and really being able to work on pieces so that when I do something new, I think I just have a better understanding of what the structure of things that works, what doesn't work or does work. The other thing is that when we've done student worship, and when I first came to Boulder, that was the main thing we did, was Sunday night worship. And I regularly preached to like less than 10 people. That's way harder room than like 1,000 people, because it became really clear when I was just talking to myself. You know, like you can tell when nobody's looking at you and nobody's paying attention. And so like, I just had to cut, like, there was no room for filler, you know.
Yeah.
Had to be all killer, as the kids say. No filler, all killer. But, like, that's sort of like, I don't know if trite's the right word. I don't want to be super disrespectful of a former guest of the podcast, best friend of Lindsey Graham, Christopher Hevner, who was on last week,
Chris. I met Chris. He's a great
grace and peace kind of guy. But there is a fluffiness to it that for me is just another reason I don't do it.
I feel you. No, that's good. Yeah. I do like your analogy of that being stand-up, though, because I do think that there's quite a bit of, for good preachers, there's quite a bit of reading the room and changing direction if you need to. And you do have to remember your plotting points. And I think that's an astute analogy. I think had I not been a preacher, I definitely would have been a surgeon. But had I not done that, I would have been a stand-up comedian.
I'd let you operate on me any day, Tim. Some of the best comedy, though, like these days, is really, I think, starting to like swing into preaching territory almost.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think there's connection. Tim, you said every preacher has one sermon. You just tell it different ways. What's the Tim Brown sermon?
What is a Tim Brown sermon? That's great. My sermon has everyone is God loves you for Christ's sake and will not let you go. That's basically the Tim Brown sermon. I just say in different ways. Or
you Rickroll people, never going to give you up.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm, and I love Rick Astley. I'm not going to lie. It's great. That guy holds up.
He
holds up. He holds up. What's yours?
Oh man, it's a similar sermon. I think the text would definitely be Jacob wrestling at the ford of the Jabbok. That's sort of like, it's the same sort of like, but very physical, sort of not letting you go, knocking your hip out of socket, sort of a deal, I think.
Yeah. William Sloan Coffin has that wonderful quote that I use all the time with that, when that comes up. He says, of course, religion is a crutch. Who told you you're not limping?
Brent, I like it. But Tim, you're on the podcast for one reason and one reason only. It's Advent here at the Vinyl Preacher, and Advent this year is brought to you by Wendy's.
I didn't know it was that big time, man. That's great. We got corporate sponsors and everything. That's
we
fantastic.
Were in talks, Tim. We may or may not have been in talks with Sparkhouse or Spark or Media 1517 that fell apart. But we don't need them.
No.
We don't need them. It was years ago now. Water under the bridge. I mean, feel free to throw money at us. We were so close to talking to people, fully integrating their products into the podcast. But now we got Wendy's, so we're good. It's Where's the Beef season. The beef is right here. I had forgotten exactly what the beef was. I keep... Tim, I don't believe in the Enneagram. I think it's pseudoscience.
I remember this about you.
Is a false idol, and that makes me a 4 on the Enneagram.
Another place we disagree. Go ahead.
and so I keep my shit list very tidy. I keep it up there, right? Obviously, number one on the list is Kevin Strickland, who spurned the podcast.
A neighboring bishop. Nice guy.
Was scheduled to come on. Great guy. Just enemy of the pod. We had historically blamed Kevin for anything we didn't like in the text because we assumed as director of worship for the LCA, he was responsible for the lectionary foolproof plan. And now then he was supposed to come on the podcast before, he's not. And now that he's bishop, he's big time in us. That's all fine. But then you know, Tim Brown was on there. And I could not remember exactly what it was. You are such a prolific writer on the internet, keeping WordPress in business, that I could remember back to, I wrote an article in response to one of your articles one time that got traction just because it was disagreeing with Tim Brown. And that was about ashes, like public ashes.
I think. Ashes on the go. And I gave you an out for that. I told you, you're in a different context, man.
I mean, I think we can get into the ashes to go. I think we're on the same page on ashes to go. But the more recent one, I think, right, was that Tim Brown does not want to be your friend. The pastors cannot have friends. Tim, you know, I'm not having much of a problem with that right now.
Took that out of personally. The context. That's all right.
Personally, right now, Tim, I don't have many friends. I'm mostly just living with a 4-year-old. Why can't I have friends, Tim?
Yeah. So actually,
beyond the obvious like social issues that I personally have.
Right. Yeah. There's lots of reasons you don't. But one of the things I really encourage all your listeners to do is actually to read the full article so that you can set up the scene well.
Or just read the headline and go to the comments.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I didn't say you can't have friends. I said you can't have friends in the parish. And the reason is, I think, is because the office of the pastor and the role prevents you from having the kind of reciprocity that true friendships need. And, you know, you can certainly hear whatever a parishioner has to say to you and then not hear it. That's kind of what pastors are paid to do. What we hear, we do not hear. Right. But you can't share the same sort of things with your parishioners without betraying the office, I think, in many ways. So that's why I say you can't repent. And you disagreed. And there's good reason to disagree. I was offering an opinion, offering a thought. And threw it out there, and I still believe it's true. I don't think you can have friends in a parish until you leave that parish, and even then you have just a few, maybe one or two.
Yeah. Well, as a not a parish pastor, I'm not super heavily involved, invested in this topic, but it does make for good podcast episode titles. I wonder, one of the things I think about, Tim, is how the role of the pastor fits into the current like society we live in. You are one of the few, one of the proud. You are one of the people who's been to Bakersfield, California. You stopped by Bakersfield, California. I was the pastor there. You came to my office. It was a visit very much appreciated by me. But also, like, I was... one of the things that I found frustrating about that experience of being in Bakersfield, being thrown to a parish, was that it felt like being a pastor was a part of, like, going to a place to be a pastor was a part. It was in some ways like a vestigial like component of like, oh, you'll be a part of this like society and like community and stuff. And that like the church as it exists now is not as it was like in the 50s or 60s or whatever, what have you. So there's an expectation of your commitment to the community that's at that high standard, but there's not, it doesn't give back the same amount that it expects from you. Does that start to make any kind of sense?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, I think you're right about that. I mean, we are operating in a model that does not exist anymore. And I'll also say, like, it is an unrealistic expectation to drop a pastor into a community and automatically assume that they're going to somehow gel and meld and that's what the community needs. Sometimes the community needs that outsider to be and remain an outsider. And I think that really good pastors have really good boundaries around that kind of thing. But it can be lonely. I think the office has a call to a certain amount of loneliness. I think that's just true. If you're going to be a pastor, there's going to be a certain amount of loneliness that you are going to have and experience. And, I mean, seminary should do a better job of preparing people for that. I really think that's true.
It's kind of crazy, right, that a profession that is so much about building relationships with people also has this, like, inescapable loneliness that's a part of that.
Yep. Yeah, and it's but you see it in I think you see it all throughout the scriptures and leadership positions. I mean, even in Jesus, right, going off to pray and calls people around him, but also can't share his full self all the time with them. And I mean, it's just there, and it's because God, to hear people's crap, you need to be able to be a little bit away from them, because the Celtic tradition had this well. They had this person that lived on the outside of the village, and that person was known as the sin eater. And you would go to the sin eater, and they would take all your crap, and they would keep it there with them on the outside of the village. And so I think really good pastors nowadays, they're like that. They're that person on the outside of the village, the sin eater, who takes people's crap and breathes it in. And then the guy in the Celtic tradition is usually a guy, sometimes a woman, would go and they would bury it in their garden. And that's where it would live. So
I sometimes talk about myself as pastor as The Giver was a big book for me in the elementary schools. Yeah. That you get to be the giver and the receiver of memory, you know, in the same sort of way. Worth noting that The Giver is set in a dystopian future.
Wait, worth noting. Yeah, no, I think that's right. That's great.
So, Tim.
Yeah.
One more item on the beef. I think we agree. Beef handled, served, buried outside of the village, beyond the village wall. Tim, you in recent years have taken to, you also have, I've mentioned many of your accolades. One of the accolades I've not yet mentioned is that you have a very well-curated Facebook presence. And in that well-curated Facebook presence over the past couple of years, you've been spinning the vinyl.
Yeah, I'm a vinyl collector. As are you, right?
I am.
I mean, I see that empty chest behind you. You're getting that thing repaired, huh?
It just came back today, and it sounds beautiful.
Oh, lovely. Good.
It did cost a little bit more than I thought, but
vinyl in general does that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dr. Dan took care of me. Tim, when is this a newish thing for you, a vinyl affinity?
I mean, it's from my childhood. My dad was a vinyl collector, and so we always played records. That's how I learned how to play records. That's how I listened how to learn. That's how I learned how to listen to a whole album. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if you want me to be a crotchety old man for a minute, I think one of the problems.
That's what this podcast is for.
Yeah, I figured it's key demographic. I think one of the things that's missing today from our musical experience is listening to the arc of a record and listening to the breadth of a record. And if there's one thing I can do for my kids, it's to help them to listen to a whole record all the way through so that you hear the musicality, you hear the arc, you hear the tone. Every album has a personality. And I think that's missing from today. So it is recent that I've gotten a record player, established myself, and so it's only been like five years or so since I've been spinning vinyl at home, and only a couple of years since I got my new spinner, which is awesome, Fluence. I've been along a vinyl collector through my father, and I took all his vinyls, by the way. So he now is bereft of all the vinyls. Well, all the good vinyls that I wanted. There are a couple that I left.
The ears start to go, and you might as well just listen to digital music.
Right, exactly. That's right. That's what, you know, I'll mention that to him. He'll buy all that, yeah. But that's, I love buying vinyl. I like buying old vinyl and new vinyl. I have a couple record shops here in Raleigh, North Carolina that we frequent and, did before the pandemic. And, you turned me on to some new stuff too. I haven't listened to as much, Phoebe Bridgers. I mean, I haven't listened to as much, that indie stuff, until recently. And, her voice, man, beautiful, haunting. Great. I bought Punisher, and you just got Punisher, right?
I got it for my birthday. It was a birthday gift, yeah.
It's a great album. And that album, too, is one that when you listen to the whole arc of the album, it's much better than listening to her music one-offs.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah. Still, the video for The End Is Near is...
I mean...
It's so good. Single shot in the L.A. Coliseum.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah.
So good. And she has really cool. As the curator of a fine social media feed, her social media stuff is really killer. Or really precise on Facebook or Twitter. Her Twitter handle is Trader Joe.
All right.
And then her Instagram handle is Fake Nudes.
I love that. That's great. That's good. I mean, you might be surprised to learn that I'm a poster and a ghoster. I don't hang out on Facebook. I post and I ghost.
How do you do that, Tim?
I have a Twitter feed, but I've never checked it in the last 3 years. And I just can't. I can't get sucked down those pipelines. I don't have enough time in the day. Just can't do it, man. I can't do it. We're like, you post stuff all the time, but you never like my stuff. It's like, well, I see a lot of your stuff because I'm never on.
You're living the dream, Tim. You're living the dream.
Well, I mean, it's not easy being an influencer. So, not that I...
The algorithms are not good for us, Tim. I'm pretty convinced of that. Well, Tim, it's Advent 4. Do you do you know... I don't know or really care about this, but... what's the word for the fourth week of Advent? I do know Gaudete Sunday last week, Advent 3 is joy. Do you know what this week is?
I believe it's peace.
All right, we'll go with that.
I could be wrong. I do know that Advent 4 falls on one of my favorite antiphons, O Clavis David, O Key of David. So like, that's the cool thing about Advent 4. Man, it's like a preacher's buffet. You can choose from so many things this Sunday to, like, hang sermons on. I am super, super jealous of folks who are in the parish right now just because...
Are you preaching this Sunday?
I miss it. No, I'm not. I miss...
That is the Advent bummer.
Yeah, I miss the Advent
sermon. For pinch-hit preachers, you don't get... I mean, I could count on one hand the number of times I preached in Advent.
Nobody gives up an... Oh, they'll give you a Wednesday night service, but nobody gives up an Advent Sunday. And, it's great. O Antiphon, O Key of David. Really fun. So you do that. You could do the Magnificat. You could do...
Nothing says peace like ripping down the mighty from their thrones.
Right.
You know, Peace Week.
Yeah. Peace is not just the absence of conflict, right? And you could do like a whole music Sunday because Luke has all those musical tunes in it, and you finally get to preach in Luke and Mark a year. So, you know, there's lots of stuff you could do. It's really cool.
It is pretty crazy, you know, dear listener. In the Revised Common Lectionary, we go through 3 years, and each of the years has an emphasis on one of the Gospels. It's not John, so this is the year of Mark, and here in the Advent, we only get two Mark texts, and the lectionary had such little regard for the baptism of John in Mark that it said, we need to go ahead and put the John version in the next week so that we can really flesh that out. And that this week is Luke. So let's talk about the texts. Sure. Do you want to talk about Samuel? Do you have hot Samuel takes?
You know what? There's a couple things, and I actually chose a song that's based off the Samuel text. So if you want, we can read it. If you're preaching, I would not preach on it, but yeah, we can do it.
All right, let's do what we do. 2 Samuel, which is the first one, but later on. When the king was settled in his house and the Lord had given him rest from all his enemies around him, the king said to the prophet Nathan, "See now, I'm living in a house of cedar. No moth problems, Tim. All his socks fully towed. Moths were not getting up in there because you need that cedar closet. The whole house is cedar. He had tapestries, all kinds of accoutrements that moths did not bother. But the ark of God stays in a tent. So Nathan said to the king, "Go, do all that you have in mind, for the Lord is with you." Got a couple questions here. Nathan seems to be responding to something that he heard the king say.
Yeah.
It was just an observation, not a request, a question, anything. But Nathan gives him permission, presumably here. But that same night, the word of the Lord came to Nathan. "Go and tell my servant David, thus says the Lord, are you the one to build me a house to live in? I have not lived in a house since the day I brought up the people of Israel from Egypt to this day, but I have been moving about in a tent and a tabernacle. And wherever I have moved about among all the people of Israel, did I ever speak a word with any of the tribal leaders of Israel, whom I commanded to shepherd my people Israel, saying, 'Why have you not built me a house of cedar?'" Really, I'm preoccupied with the building materials here. Cedar is lovely, fragrant, yeah. Nice.
Delicious.
"But therefore, you shall say to my servant David, thus says the Lord of hosts, I took you from the pasture, from following the sheep, to be the prince over all my peoples, and I've made you been with you wherever you went, and cut off all your enemies from before you, and I make for you a great name, like the name of the great ones of the earth. And I will appoint a place for my people Israel, and will plant them so that they may live in their own place, and be disturbed no more, and evildoers shall afflict them no more, as formerly from the time that I appointed judges over my people Israel, and I will give you rest from your enemies." And then I love this. "Moreover, the Lord declares..." I use that a lot in the sermons. Yeah, that's one of the things totally. That I've learned that really works. "Moreover, the Lord declares to you that the Lord will make you a house. Your house and your kingdom shall be made sure forever before me. Your throne shall be established forever."
Yeah. Yeah, God went on a little rant there.
A little ranty.
Little divine rant there. I think your first point though is salient. Like, Nathan gave David carte blanche to do whatever his mind was thinking, and that's just always dangerous. just don't say, you know, you have a blank check, do whatever you're thinking here. Especially with David. David was not known for being responsible in that way.
Anytime, as a pastor, we've talked about pastors in this episode. Oftentimes, you get people asking you for advice. Advice I never really seem to give is, you're already right. So I've learned, at least for myself, advice that just affirms all the things that I was already thinking might be therapeutic, but it's rarely helpful. Right. So Nathan, though appointed by God as a prophet to David here, not the best prophetic advice.
Yeah. He was less of a prophet there and more of just kind of maybe he was tired and just like, go do what you want. But what I love about this passage, though, and I think it might be worth pointing out, like, preacher, you can use this and think about this, like the image that you can hang a sermon off of this one is God enjoys camping. And it really works well with John if you decide on Christmas Eve to go with the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. That dwelling place actually means tenting or camping with us, right? And so this whole scene is a prelude to God taking up camp in Jesus, right? And that's why I like this text. It's, you know, why are you so worried? I'm the one who does the planting, God says, right? Forget your house of cedar. I'm the one who does the planting. I'm going to make your name great. I'm the planter. You're not the planter. I'm the one who's doing this. And Jesus is the fulfillment of that sentiment. And the fulfillment of this promise that he makes to David here, if you follow the lineage that's offered, depending on which gospel you're looking at. And that's why, if you're going to preach off this text, that's what I would do. God is a camping aficionado, and here's why.
I like it. I like the tabernacle stuff here. If I were allowed, if only Bishop Kevin Strickland would allow me to rename the Advent Sundays with one word, thematic text. I know it's a part of it, and people touch on it a lot, but I do like really preaching on the God in the darkness kind of thing during Advent. And this is, I think, an excellent way to get into that. Are you familiar, Tim, listeners of the podcast have probably heard me say this before, but I really like, there's a quote from Luther. I hate Luther quoters, and I hate Luther quoting, but...
So you're going to become what you hate.
I am going to become what I despise. Luther, it's... commentary on the in Chronicles or something on the tabernacle, where he says that God dwells in the darkness, where in the darkness of faith, where light cannot overcome it, which is him writing about the tabernacle, because the tabernacle, even as a tent, right, is an enclosed space with no light. And the idea is that the, you know, the holiest of holies, the innermost place, is this place where light cannot even penetrate. So, of course, fun stuff of breaking the dichotomy of light, good, dark, bad. But sure. Also that sort of like moving towards... one of the things that I've come to appreciate as a person who in over the past 10 years has become much more of a camper sort of person is how when you do the backpacking, the camping thing, you're forced to live by the rhythms of the celestial bodies, and that the darkness has a power over us that we do not day to day have to live with. You know, when the sun goes down, we have to stop what we're doing, which is... sounds marvelous, but not our day-to-day reality.
Yeah, and Advent is really the time when humans have lived into that or leaned into that. I mean, even pre-Christian days, this is when we leaned into that sort of a mentality and rhythm. And I think you're right. I like, and I use the word shadow just to avoid the whole dark light dichotomy issue. So shadows and light. But I think this is the perfect time to preach on. I mean, why do we have an Advent wreath anyway, right? We light a candle to illumine the shadows because, I mean, in a couple days, you're going to, well, after this podcast airs, you're going to have just one more day and you're at the shortest day of the year. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to live into that? What does it mean to think that God chooses to live in the shadows? And that, you know, like the Exodus test, you only get to see God's backside. And
dark.
Apparently.
Blots out the sun.
It's
voluminous.
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 Yeah. It's okay. I think, though, that this in a pandemic like that might speak to your people in a powerful way that. You know, it's not even here God is found, but especially here God is found.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That could be really cool.
Have you? I saw this. I don't remember who wrote it, but it's in one of the liturgical training presses Advent source books that talks about the history of the Advent wreath. One of the legends, the lore, the stories for why we have Advent wreaths told the story of folks who took the wheel off of their wagon to make the wreath as a way of intentionally slowing themselves down during this time, which is an image I always found lovely.
Yeah. Well, and imagine if you took a wheel off of your car and decided to put candles on it. Think about how your day and your rhythm would change.
As a person with a chronically broken down vehicle that drains me of lots of money, I don't have to work very hard to imagine that.
You know this reality. You can speak from experience.
That's right, with authenticity. Yeah.
But you know, I mean, also, when you're talking about rhythm, Zach, I think that, you know, knowing when there's a time to do something and when there's a time to refrain from doing it, you know, to quote the birds, who quotes Ecclesiastes,
Is that the way it went or the other way?
Yeah, that, well, who knows? But the idea around that as in there's different seasons that have different meanings and you have to live into this. Like, you know, I'm big into my heritage, my Celtic heritage. Like they knew that and they did that in these winter months. Like, what if we did it? Like in this pandemic, What if we decided, instead of overworking ourselves, which we've all been doing, what if we decided that we were going to take a step back and underwork ourselves for a little while and just live into it?
Right.
I mean, there's a holy rhythm that comes from that. Yeah, and I think that not only the season that we're in right now, but also the pandemic and also this text, it's all playing on that. And for the preacher, I mean, you could play all sorts of ways with that. I think that would be really cool. So anyway, use that. I think that'd be great.
I like it. I mean, I wish I had better advice, wisdom, ideas about how you could live into that. But that's been my like feeling, you know, throughout the pandemic, is that so much of, and it was way easier for me to like really promote it and get into it in the summer when I did not feel as much pressure to do stuff because students weren't around, and the students show up and like, we got to do things. But it just feels really obvious that we don't have to do things. I mean, I'm not, right? That's the reality too, right? Like one way or the other, I'm not getting stuff done. you know, which I think is a pretty good
commission or omission. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Like it's perhaps a decent metaphor or description for the way God works in the world, right? Like there are easy ways and hard ways for us to get to the same result. And I seem to be pretty obsessed with the hard way, is a lot more painful. So that's something.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, what if we did imagine that this time right now was like a wheel has come off the wagon, and just don't put it back on right now. It's not ready yet. You know, as a people, as a human race, let's take some fallow time, let everything heal a little bit, and then we'll see where we are.
I like it, Tim. I like it. So let's go a little. Let's Death Cab for Cutie. Let's go a little further into the shadows, if you will. One of the classics, one of the all times. If you're talking, you talked a little earlier about explaining having to introduce your children to albums and listening to music as an album. One of the things I've had to introduce to students recently is the idea of a greatest hits. Right? Because it doesn't make any sense anymore.
Yeah.
Right?
Like first introduction to the Doors. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Right? That it used to be, if I wanted to listen like to it in within the setting of the album, I had to buy a $17 album for all the ones, and there may only be a couple songs on those records that I wanted to listen to. And so you could cut the corner and just get the greatest hits album. And they had that whole series that had like little silver like label like on the top or the bottom, I think it was. And then you got all of them in one place. So it was a very wisely spent $17. But kids these days just go to Spotify and they listen to all the songs. But this text quick transition here. This text would be, I think, on the greatest hits of at least the life of Jesus, the album, you know, and we've got to stick it in here. It's worth noting because Luke's the only one who has this. So, you know, if you're only going to buy one album, you probably should buy Luke because it's got this track on it. You're going to miss it if you just buy the John album
or
wait around for the greatest hits. But you don't need to buy any Pulse stuff.
You're going
to
get so much hate mail from people who love Mark. It's okay, though. Go ahead. Continue.
I mean, do people really stand for Mark, though?
Oh, my gosh. It's my favorite.
Oh, is it? You're a Markin?
By far.
What? Convince me.
I'm all about the brevity. I think Mark doesn't have time to mess around.
You're all about that action.
Yeah. And B, also, I mean, like, Mark also has very little time for lore. Like Matthew and Luke, they're all dabbling in this lore, and they don't agree with each other. Mark's like, man, forget that mess. Let's just go straight to, hey, this wandering guy came out of Galilee, and this is what he said, which I appreciate. You know?
All killer, no filler. I don't have a take.
Written that down nine times. I love that.
I've probably bounced around and said different gospels are my favorite. But
I do love this story, though.
This is a good one, right? In the sixth month, the angel Gabriel was sent by God to a town in Galilee, which is more of a dispersed area, describing a geographic region, called Nazareth, to a virgin engaged to a man whose name was Joseph of the house of David. Hey, we just heard a story about that guy. The virgin's name was Mary, and he came to her and said, "Greetings, favored one, the Lord is with you." But she was much perplexed by his words and pondered what sort of greetings this might be. And the angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you found favor with God, and now you will conceive in your womb and bear a son, and you will name him Jesus." To note some social distance, if anyone, including a gynecologist, were to tell my wife, "Don't worry, you're pregnant," we wouldn't be like, "Oh, cool."
And also, what you're going to name the baby, but go ahead. Yeah.
He will be great, and he will be called Son of the Most High, and the Lord God will give to him the throne of his ancestor David, and he will reign over that sweet, sweet cedar house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there will be no end. And Mary said to the angel, "How can this be, since I am a virgin?" And the angel said to her, "The Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. Therefore, the child to be born will be holy. He will be called Son of God. And now your relative Elizabeth," I like that we throw in this, like, I like the whole Elizabeth, like, if you're looking to create a spinoff series based on the Gospels, might I suggest Elizabeth? You know, I think
she's great.
There's a lot of options here.
She's great.
The Galilean. Kind of like a la The Mandalorian. "And now your relative Elizabeth, in her old age, has also conceived a son, and this is the sixth month for her who is said to be barren, for nothing will be impossible." Oh, is that future tense? "For nothing will be impossible with God."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
"Then Mary said, 'Here I am, the servant of the Lord. Let it be with me according to your word.' And then the angel departed from her." Just your average visitation by an angel.
Why not?
To a young woman.
Yeah. It's setting the scene, man. This is all prelude. This is all prelude. But for Christmas. But I mean, big in Mary world, right? Like this is Mary's life changing thing.
Yeah, pretty significant in Mary's life.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned a part that always resonates with me in this section, and that's nobody asked Mary if she was willing, and. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I bring that up is because I do think that it is true that these texts, this Advent season, can be really hard for those in our community who struggle with fertility and infertility, and even Elizabeth, who is said to be barren in her old age. Like that word barren, I know that is a hard word to hear, and. It's like pastoral sensibility to me says there's got to be some nod to the fact that sometimes these texts are difficult for folks who want a family and can't have it, or didn't want a family and ended up pregnant, and I mean all sorts of like human trauma, right? This is a beautiful Christmas text, and it's also a text that triggers a lot of human trauma, and we can hold both of those at the same time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a ton here. For sure. Full disclosure, Tim, I am preaching next week. not on this text. In listeners' time, I have already preached, and I'm sure it was fantastic. I'm preaching at the Episcopal Church where we do stuff at St. Aidan's. I'm looking forward to it. A thing you sometimes get as a pinch hit preacher is sometimes they will ask you to talk about specific things.
Yeah.
And so mental health stuff is one of the things I'm supposed to be talking about. I'm literally working on the sermon right now. I see it in this text. So I'll offer that up. And that's to say that one of the things that's been really frustrating to me about the pandemic is that it has taken me away from one of my favorite places to go. Which is the future. I love daydreaming. I love imagining the way life might or could be. And this thing has stolen like my dreams because I get so into it, right, that I like to like dream for things like that, because those things sometimes come to pass and I can help make them happen, and I feel so impotent in making my dreams happen these days that sucks. I'm intrigued by, I'm interested in, I am so deliriously tired from living in this pandemic thing that this sort of like excuse the cliche, liminal space of a reality where an angel might come and talk to you seems plausible right now. This does not feel that fantastic. Please have an angel come and tell me what's going to happen And to make that, I mean, so I'm going to end up with the good news that you kind of lifted up pointedly towards the end of that Second Samuel, is the good news that God is most especially with you. It feels like, you know, like I'm shut up in the tabernacle, that I can't see the future, that I'm just stuck here in this place, and this, like, for lack of a better metaphor, dark room. And it is this promise that it's in that dark room where the angel's going to show up and point you towards a future that is good.
Yeah. And by the way, I mean, what a heavy topic to preach on, Zach. But you're preaching this weekend, right? Is that what you said?
I'm preaching Advent 3.
You know what? Mary might be able to help us all out here too, even for the Sunday of this podcast, because December 12th is the feast of the Virgin of Guadalupe, and the story of that in 1513, right, where Juan Diego has this vision where Mary comes and visits him, and I was doing some writing on this today, which is why it's on my mind. But the beauty of that is not that Mary shows up to Juan Diego; it's that she spoke his Aztec tongue when she did, right? That it was you know, in the shadow of oppression, the conquistadors and the church coming in and oppressing all of these people, God shows up in the form of the Virgin of Guadalupe and speaks the language that he knows, and I think that might be like a beauty to all of this, right? That we wait for that vision, we wait for that hope, and we are assured time after time that when God shows up in these ways, God is going to speak in a way that we get it, and that we that speaks to our hearts and our fears and all that sort of thing. And even in this text, right? Like, Mary ends up singing a song that's on all of our hearts in right after this, which you should definitely use as the psalm for the day. Don't go with the other one, the Magnificat. I mean, that might be in a pandemic times, that might be the best word that we can get, is that that God hears and speaks the pain that we have.
And this might be an appropriate time. I don't know if I've done this in a while, that I should get on one of my soapboxes here and preach about. I think that Lutherans have an obligation to do some reclaiming of Mary. Right. Like there are so many of us, and I've certainly been a part of this, I think, you know, have stayed away from Mary in some part because, you know, it's too Catholic or what have you. But it is that staying away that creates the space for a lot of the really gross stuff that's happened with Mary. Like, we haven't hit on it here, right? But virgin, and respectfully, I will refer to Our Lady of Guadalupe or Lady of the San Juan de los Lagos as the Virgin. But there's some really gross stuff, right, that's happened with that purity stuff.
Right.
And that it's not just... It's always kind of fun to note that Luther's the church in which Luther preached most often in Wittenberg is St. Mary's, right?
St. Mary's, right.
And that's not just an oddity, a fun fact to throw into things, right? But that we have an obligation to claim Mary as a part of our tradition, and to claim the parts of her tradition that make her so powerful, mm-hmm. like you've lifted mm-hmm. up. That what happened, and that's a big part of kind of the backstory of the podcast and Matt and I's friendship, right, is that Matt's wife wrote her dissertation in Fulbright Scholar on Our Lady of San Juan de los Lagos, which is another image of the Virgin. There are many images of the Virgin. They all, and that's what, I mean, that's incredible. Like, it's really, when you've put it really nicely for me, Tim, that it wasn't just Our Lady of San Juan, of Guadalupe, but all over Mexico, all over the Americas, these images of the Virgin started showing up primarily through indigenous people. And it's this incredible, like, it's this, like, it is an oppressed people claiming the religion and taking it away from their oppressors.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really remarkable. And we have an obligation to tell that sort of cruciform story, because that's who we are, as Lutherans. So, I like that a lot, Tim.
That's a lovely mic drop. And, you know, we should sit at Mary's feet and listen to her and learn from her. I think this is an important part of the church these days, is we can reclaim the place of Mary and as the Theotokos, as the God bearer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Meister Eckhart, right? What good does it have? What good is it that Mary carry the Christ child if we do not also carry the Christ child within us, right?
That's the Lutheran, like, vocational ethic, you know, to be the Theotokos. Tim, thanks. What are you listening to as you write a sermon this week?
And thank you. Thanks for having me on. I got a couple. I'm going to suggest the Brave Preacher that you can, instead of doing the Magnificat for the psalm, which you absolutely could, you could also just spin Tracy Chapman's Talking About a Revolution from her 1988 album, self-titled, first track on that album. And I listened to that album when I was a kid and obviously fell in love with Fast Car. But Talking About a Revolution has long been my favorite track on that album. And it is the Magnificat through Tracy Chapman's eyes. That's one I'm listening to for sure. And another one, if you're interested, would be a little band from Cincinnati called Over the Rhine, which I love. They're a little Newgrass, and they have a song called New Redemption Song that fits perfectly with this Sunday. I think it's great. And then a final offering I'd give you is one that's homegrown that I'm sure you know and love for being a Carolinian yourself, Mandolin Orange. Do you know Mandolin Orange?
Oh, my gosh. We have so they are managed by Jimmy Ryan, who I grew up with in Lincolnton and was involved in LYO stuff with. Jimmy's still a good friend. So, love the Mandolin Orange.
Well, good. I'll give them a little press here. They have a great song that fits with that first reading, that Second Samuel reading called House of Stone. It's off of their album called This Side of Jordan, which is a great album. Definitely worth buying the whole album and spinning it on vinyl. Yeah.
My issue with Mandolin Orange, just to have one small issue, because I enjoy playing it on the banjo and guitar, is his ability to squeeze syllables into beats is just, you have to listen to the song so much in order to like sing it, because you're like, how does he say 14 words on this beat, like in this measure? He's and it's not like fast at all. It's like drawly, like it's really something.
Often fabricated, never imitated. You know, I think that's really true about his song about the Civil War, and it's blanking me right now. But gosh, I tried to cover that with my little Newgrass band, and we did what we could with it. He's just too they're just too amazing to do it well. But yeah, you are right. They're hard to play.
Wildfire.
There it is.
It's a really good song.
Beautiful.
Like it.
We
used to
play that. We played that in church. What are you listening to?
I've been listening to and continuing. I started in the summer. Tim, I'm not very good at practices. My life has been too chaotic over the past, I don't know, 6 years. But one of the practices I try to do is I try to read a nonfiction book in the summer every year that has absolutely nothing to do with the church or organized religion. I've read about Colorado Grizzly Bears, which I love. Water in the West. And this year I read a book about Laurel Canyon, the Laurel Canyon music scene of the 60s and early 70s. And so Laurel Canyon stuff has been a thing. And there are a couple of really good documentaries. Echo in the Canyon is a two-part one you can find on Amazon Prime right now. I think that one's really good. On Netflix, you have one hosted by Jacob Dylan. That's pretty good. And I've recently watched both of them. And I've gotten into Jackson Browne. I never had really been into Jackson Browne. I did not know. Did you know this? Jackson Browne wrote Take It Easy.
I don't know. I did not know that.
Gave it to the Eagles. That's wild.
That's awesome.
Right?
Yeah.
And my Jackson Brown jam right now is Doctor My Eyes.
Doctor My Eyes
has seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. I think there's a plaintive tone, I think, in these texts hit Advent. As they're like, and that's just a part of that whole like, we've been waiting and waiting, which people can't relate to what that's like. I know you really have to do a lot of work as a preacher to explain what it's like to wait for a long time for an unknown salvation to come eventually. I'm singing, you know, I was singing in the car last night. I'm singing Doctor My Eyes, Jackson Brown. Then, what am I putting on the playlist? That's why I got to write them down. I'm putting Phoebe Bridgers' Halloween on because you're here with me, Tim.
Yeah. You know I'm a fan. That's great.
And, oh my gosh, what was it? What was I doing? I had another song. It was in my head. I didn't write it down.
Well, you know what? I'll offer you one. If you're going with Jackson Brown, Finn, my son, one of his favorites is Running on Empty. You could certainly put that on the playlist for this album.
I think I was actually going to do Death Cab for Cutie. We'll put it on the playlist. We'll put Finn's
like
on.
Death Cab for Cutie, though.
We'll do Death Cab for Cuties. Follow You Into the Dark.
Oh, nice. That's a great one. Yeah, right? Man. That's good.
Right?
That's a nice riff.
One of the strong stances of this podcast is that just because a song is sad doesn't make it not a good news.
Oh, no.
You know? No. Sad can be good news.
Elton John, sad songs say so much. I mean.
Oh, my gosh.
So true.
Oh. Well, Tim, I am so glad for you being here on the podcast. Thanks for taking time. And folks can always find you on the internet with your well-curated social media feeds. ReluctantChristian.com with an X. Any other things you want to plug?
No. I would just say it's good to see your face and good to be on, and everybody hang in there. We're gonna get through this, and if you ever need a preacher for a B Sunday, feel free to hit me up.
Slaughter the Innocent, he's available. It's been perfect. Real vinyl.